and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Yeah, that's right. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Good morning to you, Mark Riley.
Good morning to you, Mark Maron.
Thank you. Nice to see you. Kalo, the Costco ho, iPod ho, now you're just a ho. At the board, how is everything? Everybody all right here in the studio?
Everything's great.
Yeah, Riley?
To coin a phrase, I've heard that before.
Yes. Everything is
we'll
all right.
We'll get into that later this
all
morning.
All right. All right. It is Monday. I'm trying to pull it around, man. Do you feel like you've been bonked in the head with a hammer, or is that just me?
No, I feel like I've been bonked in the head with a hammer.
Yes. I had a pretty good weekend. My wife's in town, so there was a lot of there was fun and fighting. There was movies and crying. It was, you know, it's well-rounded. There's there's no crying this weekend. I apologize for saying that. Everything, there was really no fighting. That it doesn't work anymore. You get to a certain point, Riley, in a relationship where you start the fight and they just go, "I'm not doing this."
Really?
And then you got to sit there and go, "But why?" And then they go, "I'm just not doing this. Are we going to do this now?" And then they laugh at you, and then you start crying because you feel like a child. Anybody? Nobody? Nothing? Huh?
So you then you call the truce.
Yeah. Well, there was no... Exactly. But there wasn't much fighting. We went out to some nice dinners. I saw some movies, Riley, which is a weird... It's an alien pastime to you.
It certainly is. I spent my weekend doing other things.
Uh-huh. I went to see a Batman. Batman Begins.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was great. I thought Christian Bale's was great. I thought Liam Neeson was great. All the acting was great. The story is good. There's actually even some moments in it where I'm like, well, that's interesting. You know, where I had to compare myself to Batman. I'm not unlike Batman in that, you know, I have to stop reveling in the darkness and the hopelessness and maybe help people in the world. So, needless to say, I'm designing a suit for
myself.
What
about a car? Where's the car?
The car, I'm driving my Honda, my 96 Honda out from L.A., and I'm going to have it souped up. You know what I mean?
I got some people that can do that for you.
You do?
Yeah.
I love that. They soup up Hondas now, and that'll be my...
They soup up anything now. They soup up, you know, they'll soup up a tricycle if you pay them enough.
I saw a guy with a souped up tricycle, actually. Not a tricycle, but a bike, a lowrider regular bike.
Yeah.
Like, he had, rims on it and everything. Like, just the kind you ride. I'm like, dude, that's just an advertisement for you, your envy of not having a car.
Well, you know, there's an advertisement that shows Lance Armstrong coming back to his bicycle place and finding out that some guys from some other show have chopped up all his bicycles, turned them into, like, motorcycle-looking choppers.
Right.
And he's just standing there going, what?
Yeah. And I saw, what did I see? I saw that horrendous Tom Cruise movie by Steven Spielberg. What is that?
Worlds.
The War of the Worlds.
Oh, okay.
It was horrible. Horrendous movie. But once again, you know, they're like, they spent a lot of money on those things. You know, the machines were cool. And, you know, when they come out of the thing, it's great. I'm just going to leave it at that if you haven't seen it. You know what? I'm not even going to encourage you to see it. Tom Cruise is a vacuum of talentlessness at the center of this film. He,
that's so cool.
His only talent really is his ability to focus. And his ability to be sort of a crappy father was non-existent. But, you know, he looks good, and, you know, he turned around.
He's got L. Ron Hubbard behind him.
Well, this is definitely an L. Ron Hubbardish movie.
I'm not surprised.
Except in the end, the aliens would have taken Cruise away to their planet, Scientology, the Scientology planet, and made him king.
You know, I did something yesterday, Maron, that I have never, ever done before.
I'm in. What is it?
I watched golf.
Wow.
It was scary. I watched the end of the British Open when Tiger Woods was just like finishing off all the rest of the field because he won.
Oh.
But I mean, it was just like you watched him walking up this fairway and there were like people running around like he was God showed up or something.
I've never watched golf.
Me neither.
I'm not a big sports guy, but I assume it's a lot of like, yes!
I only watched like 15 minutes of it, but it's something I had never, ever thought about doing before.
Okay, well, maybe you should get out there and play. I could see you playing some golf.
Nah, it's too tiring.
Come on, what do you mean too tiring? It's like the Zen. It's like people love it.
I know. Some of my closest friends swear by it, but it's not for me.
Riley, come on, man. You're just afraid to get out of the house.
Nah, man. I got out of the house. I went to a drum and bugle course.
Yeah,
this is my summer, man.
Maybe you should get yourself a snare drum and go to the golf course.
Yeah, that'll work.
You can just play for your friends.
Yeah, right. No cameras, please.
So it's been confirmed. Matthew Cooper, the Time reporter, in his federal grand jury testimony has said that Rove was his first source on the CIA agent and that Karl Rove did basically out Valerie Plame, am I wrong?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And, you know, the dates and the timelines and all of this stuff, Maron, is starting to make my head hurt.
I know, I'm getting tired of it.
You know, I mean, what we have here is a low-life administration that lashed out against someone who disagreed with their rationale for going to
war. Well,
that's
right.
That's what we got.
Exactly. I mean, let's not, you know, forget what this is about. You know, remember, as of today, 1,767 members of the U.S. military have died since the war started in Iraq in May 2003. Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Iraqi civilians have died. Thousands of Americans and Iraqis have been injured. Now, this investigation is really about the false pretenses that we went to this war about. And Joe Wilson had the courage to tell the truth and be the first one to sort of, you know, make that cry of, look, you guys are lying.
Yeah.
And this was the Niger, this was the yellow cake, this was him saying that there was no agreement between Saddam Hussein and Niger to get yellow cake for weapons of mass destruction. Now we know there were no weapons of mass destruction, there was no yellow cake.
No.
And there was no connection between terrorism and Saddam Hussein's government. So the entire pretense for this war was a lie, and this is how many people are dead, and this is what is at the core of this, is that Karl Rove compromised national security in a personal vendetta against Joe Wilson for telling the truth about going to war that we did not need to go into.
We also, Mark, we see this investigation going on against the backdrop of continually eroding support for the rationale for war in the first place. More and more Americans are starting to disbelieve what the administration was saying in 2002 and early 2003. Remember that there was a pretty widespread support out here in the United States for going to war in the first place. And what we're seeing as this investigation unfolds is more and more people in, former supporters of the war, including, by the way, several of the major players involved in this.
Yep.
And now they're starting to say, wait a minute, you mean we've got took like this?
Well, I think a lot of people realize that, and I think a lot of Republicans, by disconnecting themselves from this administration, by disconnecting themselves from Bush around this case, are sort of trying to hedge their bets as to what the hell's going to happen here. They're nervous. They're afraid. If Rove goes down, that means Bush goes down in terms of being an effective leader, because Rove is Bush's brain, and Bush is dirty in this. I mean, let's not forget, one thing you're not hearing on the mainstream media is that George Bush had to give testimony to the federal prosecutor, to Patrick Fitzgerald.
Yep.
Last June, he sat with him for over an hour and was questioned by this prosecutor. That's the president, George Bush. Something you don't hear. If it were Clinton, Jesus, we'd be hearing about it every 5 minutes. But George Bush was interrogated by this federal prosecutor about this leak. Karl Rove has met with him no less than five times.
Mm-hmm.
This is real deal stuff that isn't being covered because the mainstream press, out of inability to actually do any reporting, is just sort of, you know, regurgitating Republican talking points in one form or another. Later in the show, it's worth waiting around for if you got nothing to do or check back with us. Joe Wilson, Ambassador Joe Wilson, whose wife is at the center of this case, will be on this show, and we're going to talk more about this in a little while. But, you know, this guy Fitzgerald, this federal prosecutor, he's the real deal, man. He's gone after Bin Laden. He's gone after the Gambino crime family. This guy has guts. If there's something to be gotten at, he's going to get at it.
Yeah.
And there may be an indictment. My fear is Karl Rove on the cover of Newsweek and Time this week.
Yeah, right.
If this isn't, you know, him looking into a noose, if this isn't him about to go down, this is going to be his coming out party. I mean, you know, not in a gay way, but in terms of like all this publicity around him. If he doesn't go down, he's going to, you know, he is now going to be elevated to a level that makes me nauseous.
I'm telling you, this is the administration's smoking gun. And we're going to talk to Joe Wilson, Ambassador Joe Wilson, about this, because we are looking at a situation where the government of this country may well have lied to its people. That's the big picture that we're seeing here, that the entire rationale for sending American troops off to fight and die has been exposed as a complete and utter fabrication.
Yes. It's 15 past the hour. Good morning. It's Monday. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the nightmare that is Iraq. Please stay with us. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
20 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Good morning. It's Monday. We're pulling it together. I feel my synapses starting to function properly. They needed to be lubricated. I needed some smelling salts.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and some tea. I got some tea going. Maybe coffee in a little while, but lately the coffee this hour seizes my brain up, and I go into some sort of weird kind of like, you know, hyper paralysis. Like, just like, do you know what I mean? My brain just seizes up. So we're going to talk about Iraq. We're going to talk a little bit about more about, why don't we do this? Why don't we hear Matthew Cooper, Time Magazine's Matthew Cooper, after his grand jury testimony, has said this. He said this on with Tim Russert,
Russert
on Meet the Press. Is that what it is? That's what it is. Let's hear that, Chris.
For the record, the first time you learned that Joe Wilson's wife worked for the CIA was from Karl Rove.
That's correct.
Okay, so there you go. There's that, mm-hmm. And also there's. Can we hear the other one there, Chris? With FBI.
When Carl concluded his conversation with you, you write, he said, "I've already said too much." What did that mean?
Well, I'm not sure what it meant, Tim. At first, you know, I thought maybe he meant I've been indiscreet, and then as I thought about it, I thought it might be just more benign, like I've said too much. I've got to get to a meeting. I don't know exactly what he meant, but I do know the memory of that line has stayed in my head for 2 years.
Question, who the hell says, I've said too much, I got to go, you know, to go to a meeting?
No, you just
nobody.
Say,
nobody.
I got to go to a meeting.
Yeah, so, I mean, whether or not he was that scheming about it and he teased all this thing, it's clear that, in my mind, that George Bush, Dick Cheney, Scooter Libby, Dick Cheney's right-hand man, and Karl Rove all knew about this. And there's a new question about this memo, this State Department memo, that was on an airplane with Colin Powell the day after Joe Wilson, you know, released his editorial in the New York Times, mm-hmm. and George Bush was on that plane with his staff. The big question now is, in that memo, there was information about yellowcake uranium and Valerie Plame.
Yes.
Was that a discussion point on that plane? Because if it was, it would undermine the GOP's case.
It would. And remember that 1 week to the day after that memo surfaced, Robert Novak outed Valerie Plame
right.
in his column.
And the reason it would undermine their case is because Rove claims that the first time he heard about all this was chatting with these reporters days later.
Yeah.
My God, this is getting exciting. In terms of yellowcake, Brian from Everett, Massachusetts, our insomniac from Everett, I'm sorry, Everett, Washington. There is an Everett, Massachusetts. Isn't
yes,
there,
there yeah. is, but Everett, he isn't in it.
I know, because it's in the middle of the night. And
no, it's morning because, see, I just decide, you know, healthy, wealthy, and wise, you know, you go to sleep early and wake up early.
I was just giving you the big intro, Brian. Brian from Everett, Washington.
Are we on?
Yeah.
I've climbed the virtual beanstalk and latched onto the solar winds this morning.
Yes. And so what do you got for us?
I have a song, but well, it seems.
Yes.
Gotta keep certain people away from the yellow cake.
Yellow cake uranium. Yes.
I mean, I don't know, and it just makes you wonder if plutonium is from Pluto, is uranium from, is that from Uranus planet?
Okay, get on with the song.
I wrote a song.
Okay.
About flying through space because we need to. I decided we need to take all this toxic material and send it back to Mars.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay. Anyway.
Here.
Okay. Flying through space with the kindest of grace, I soared away from the sun. Going past Mars in spots and rings to a very gaseous one. By chance I happened upon Uranus.
All right.
And I
yeah.
looked
All right.
down
okay.
with interest and sent down a probe.
You know, Brian, let's get back to the politics. What happened to the insightful cutting edge of your bipolar disposition and the relationship?
I don't know, man. Maybe I need to be a little more on the edge. Maybe I've come to terms with some things. Maybe I'm just more relaxed today.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're feeling better. We got to go. Thanks, Seth. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Brian. He's gone mainstream, Brian.
He's going for the sex stuff, apparently. He's a thinly veiled sexual metaphor. Okay, so let's talk about Iraq and what happened there over the weekend. In the last week, over 170 people have been killed. There was a particularly heinous suicide bombing 2 days ago where a suicide bomber drove his vehicle up next to a fuel tanker. It's killed upwards of 90 people, over 100 maybe now.
Yeah, last count was something like 98, but they're still trying to find body parts.
Over 150 people injured. I mean, and this is all in, and now we have a Shia cleric or a Shia spokesman
spokesperson coming out saying that this is it. This is the beginning of civil war, which we've heard from many people over and over again.
See, what's scary about the Shia leadership saying this is that apparently, if published reports are to be believed, it is that same Shia leadership, Ali al-Sistani, the Grand Ayatollah, who have held back the Shia militias who have been looking to exact revenge on what they consider to be the Sunni leadership that is somehow responsible in their eyes for this rash of bombing.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that I think everyone believes that if the Shia cut loose and if the Shia start going after the Sunnis, you will then have civil war.
Well, this is not an unusual situation where you have a group of people that were ruled over by another for years, mm-hmm. and then the tables turn. I mean, it is completely predictable almost that once that other party gets control, that they were reaped just hell on the ones that ruled them.
Yeah, and it looks as though if you believe that Zarqawi is behind a lot of these suicide bombs, he seems to have a never-ending stream of people who are prepared to do this. And later on, maybe we can talk about, you know, the mindset of people who actually end up doing this. I mean, you're talking about, what, something on the order of 11 suicide bombs
well,
in
you
a
know,
week?
I'll tell you what's scary after London is that the mindset, unfortunately, is not something you can detect. I mean, if I
no,
met those guys and went to a, you know, sat down from them and had a conversation with them over coffee or something just by coincidence,
we
would
wouldn't
never know.
Know.
These
we
are people that
know.
Visit their relatives, they have kids, they have jobs, they teach children. It's mind-blowing. It's like a switch goes on. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about, you guys remember the Truth Tour, which was a bunch of right-wing radio personalities, third-tier ones, went over to Iraq to get to the truth and balance out the reporting. Well, there's another guy from Minnesota, this guy Mark Yost, an editorial writer, in St. Paul, said he knew the truth, yet he got flack from his colleagues, man. And we're going to share that exchange with you, truth versus non-truth, and about Iraq. And that's all coming up next. And Joe Wilson at the top of the hour. You might want to stay around for that. It's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio, 27 past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, it's Monday morning. I hope it's being as kind to you as possible. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. In a little less than 25 minutes or so, maybe a half hour, top of the hour, having Ambassador Joe Wilson, whose wife Valerie Plame is sort of at the center of this investigation by federal prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald. Now, Joe Wilson, on our show about a year ago, this is May 6th, 2004, said this.
If the president truly wants to get to the bottom of it, the first place he ought to go is Karl Rove's office. The investigation really starts with him. This was a political act. It was an un-American act, frankly. It was despicable.
Over a year ago, Joe Wilson has been being attacked by Republicans from all sides, but he's got nothing to hide. He's been frank. He's been truthful. It's not about him. It is about Karl Rove and President Bush, who are guilty of compromising national security for personal vendettas and to justify a war that was based on lies. Okay, sometimes it's very hard to tell what's in the news. Thank God we got this Wi-Fi 5000 headline translator, the iNews. You guys know what it is. Let's have let's feed it some headlines. From Voice of America. Bush asks for fair consideration of Supreme Court nominee. Bush asks for fair consideration of Supreme Court nominee. Translation. Bush asks for cooperation from Democrats, says handcuffed and kneeling will be fine. Yeah. From the Chicago Sun-Times, Schwarzenegger gives up $5 million contract with Fitness Mags. Schwarzenegger gives up $5 million contract with Fitness Mag. Translation, defeat leaves Schwarzenegger shriveled, flaccid. There you go. All right. From San Mateo County Times, village people, cop arrested. Village people, cop arrested. Translation, it's fun to stay at the J-A-I-L. It's fun to stay at the J-A-I-L. All right. Okay, so let's get this. The Truth Tour, this is a theme that goes on in terms of right-wing. They're not journalists. They're personalities, talk show personalities, who talk Republican talking points. And their big criticism is that the liberal media only captures what's negative about the Iraq war. The liberal media, I don't think there is a liberal media. I think there's a right-wing media and an irresponsible media. And I believe that if they covered this war effectively, it would be twice as bad as what we're seeing right now. But last week, a guy named Mark Yost, an editorial writer at Knight Ridder's St. Paul Pioneer Press, wrote a column criticizing the Iraq War coverage as bad for focusing on the negative aspects. As they say, this is what they do. This is a talking point. The problem with this is that these guys just put this information out there, and usually, you know, no one really reacts to it. But Knight Ridder is a very, they've been very amazing in their Iraq War coverage in their other papers. Okay, so obviously, what happened was when other people that his colleagues, this guy Yost's colleagues, got wind of this editorial he wrote, he basically got his ass fed to him, if I can say that. You know, I think...
Well, you just did.
I did. Yeah. Like a colleague at the Pi Press, this guy Chuck Lazutsky, writes, quote, "With your column, you have spat on the copy of the brave men and women who are doing their best in terrible conditions. More than 20 reporters have died in Iraq from around the world. You've insulted them and demeaned them, and to much lesser degree, demean the reporters everywhere who've been threatened with bodily harm, who've been screamed at or denied public records just because they wanted to present the closest approximation to the truth they could. I am embarrassed to call you my colleague," unquote. Now, you got to understand something. This guy, Mark Yost, all right? Mark Yost from the St. Paul Pioneer Press, sitting in Minnesota, pontificating about how the negative press, the liberal press, is misrepresenting the war and only focusing on the negative. So moron Yost decides to respond again. All right, because he thinks he knows from his office in Minnesota. He says, quote, "I know the reporting's bad in Iraq because I know people in Iraq. A Marine colonel buddy just finished a stint overseeing the power grid. When's the last time you read a story about the progress being made on the power grid or the new desalination plant that just came online or the school that just opened or the Iraq policeman who died doing something heroic?" See, this is where these guys go. They pick these weird little moments. These are talking points as well. What about the schools being built? What about that, you know, they're helping people, the sewage in the streets? He says also, Mark Yost, quote, "I also get unfiltered news from Iraq through an email network of military friends who aren't so blinded by their own politics that they can't see the real good we're doing there." Again, talking point. This is like, you know, I know people in the military who are being misrepresented by this liberal press because it's always negative. These guys are there doing great stuff. There's no question there are good people there doing work, but he's misrepresenting it in the sense that he's saying that it's all good, or there's 50% good, or that it's a balanced situation, which it isn't. I mean, most of the news that comes out is negative. If he wants to focus on these moments of goodness in a pit of chaos and blood, that's fine. But here's what happens. Knight Ridder, their bureau chief in Washington, this guy Clark Hoyt, first, you know, sends Mark Yost a letter. Or publishes an editorial. Quote, "It's astonishing that Mark Yost, from the distance and safety of St. Paul, Minnesota, presumes to know what's going on in Iraq. Yost asks why you don't read about progress being made in the power grid, which the colonel oversaw. Maybe it's because there is no progress. Iraqis currently have electricity for an average of 9 hours a day. A year ago, they averaged 10 hours of electricity. Iraq's oil production is still below pre-war levels. The unemployment rate is between 30% and 40%. New cases of hepatitis have doubled over the rate of 2002, largely because of problems with getting clean drinking water and disposing of sewage." So this guy is giving him the straight stuff. I mean, this guy, Mark Yost, misrepresenting the conflict by saying that he's got military friends and that liberals always misrepresent it. He's just lying, and he's wrong, and it's arrogant and just prideful for him to make these assumptions from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Well, what's amazing about this is that his colleagues from Knight Ridder who are in Baghdad are the ones that are taking him to task. You would think, Mark, that if there was any validity to what he was saying or any validity to his belief system, yeah, that he would have some backers among the people from Knight Ridder. He does not. Yeah. What he has are people who are saying, you know, you need to come over here and spend some time living like we live and like the people, Iraqi civilians end up living.
Here's more from Washington Bureau Chief Clark Hoyt, Knight Ridder's Washington Bureau Chief, to Mark Yost. Quote, "The unfiltered news Yost gets from his military friends is, in fact, filtered by their isolation in the Green Zone and on American military bases from the Iraqi population, an isolation made necessary by the ferocity of the insurgency. To say that isn't to argue that their perspective isn't valid, it's just limited and incomplete. But really got me, Riley, that's an end quote there, mm-hmm. is that Hannah Alam, and this is Knight Ridder's Baghdad bureau chief, and Knight Ridder has done amazingly decent journalism from Iraq, you know, ahead of the curve. She says, quote, I invite Mr. Yost to spend a week in our Baghdad bureau where he can see our Iraqi staff members' toothbrushes lined up in the bathroom because they have no running water at home. I frequently find them camping out in the office overnight because electricity is still only sporadic in their sweltering neighborhoods, despite what I am sure are the best-intentioned efforts of people like his Marine buddy working on the electrical grid, end quote. See, what she does is she says there's plenty of well-intentioned soldiers there, but this idea that there is an imbalance to reporting is ridiculous. Perhaps Mr. Yost, I'm quoting again, would be moved by our office's tribute wall to Yasser Salehi, our brave and wonderful colleague who at age 30 joined the ranks of Iraqi civilians shot to death by American soldiers. Mr. Yost would have appreciated one of Yasser's last stories, a rare good news piece about humanitarian aid reaching the holy city of Najaf. Mr. Yost's contention that 14 of Iraq's 18 provinces are stable is pure fantasy. On his visit to Baghdad, he can check that by chatting with our resident British security consultant, who every day receives a province-by-province breakdown of the roadside bombs, ambushes, assassinations, and other violence throughout the country. If Baghdad is too far for Mr. Yost to travel, and I don't blame him given the treacherous airport road to reach our fortress-like hotel, why not just head to Oklahoma? There he can meet my former Iraqi translator, Ban Adil, and her young son. They're rebuilding their lives under political asylum after insurgents in Baghdad followed Ban's family home one night and gunned down her four-year-old daughter, her husband, and her elderly mother-in-law. See that? And this is the killer line. Freshly painted schools and new desalination plant might add up to mission accomplished for some people. Too bad Ban's daughter never got to enjoy those fruits of her liberation. End quote. Now, this is all in response to this guy, Mark Yost, a St. Paul, Minnesota op-ed piece he did on, you know, the biased representation of Iraq coming through mainstream liberal media. It's just crap. These people are just full of crap, because the truth of the matter is, if they really wanted to represent this war, it would be even worse. There's nothing wrong with saying, like, you know, some of these troops are doing, they're doing great work. They're there for the right reasons. But let's just be honest. The violence and the you know, insane chaos of the political situation, and the fact that people on the ground, active military people, have said that this thing is unwinnable on a military level. And today, Riley, we get something from a Shia spokesperson saying that it's drifting into civil war.
It's drifting into civil war. And, you know, all of this that Yost speaks about, the whole notion of reporting good news, would seem to indicate that he believes that maybe they shouldn't cover 150 people who died this past weekend, Iraqi civilians. They shouldn't cover the fact that suicide bombers are virtually operating at will inside the country. Should we talk about whatever desalination progress has been made to the exclusion of reporting the news?
They're mad that the reality of violence is more compelling to people than the happy ending that is imposed upon the situation. They know, people like Mark Yost and the right-wing propaganda machine knows, that if they keep putting out the news that says things are going well, that is the reality that people will believe. I mean, this is one of those strange situations where it's almost it almost benefits the news that people are just, you know, love to see a train wreck. Because I think that it seems to me that all the people we've talked to, reporters on the ground in Iraq, have pretty much confirmed the fact that it is disastrous there.
Not just disastrous, Mark. There has been a call by a member of the Iraqi parliament to form local militias. People should not underestimate how important that is. Because when you start talking about local militias, you're talking about vigilantism. You're talking about people who will operate outside the scope of the government, people who operate outside the scope of the Iraqi security forces. You're talking about the real ramp to sectarian civil war.
Wow. All right, so when as we continue this show, I want you to look forward to the fact that Ambassador Joe Wilson is going to be here at the top of the hour. Coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit more about the fact that Karl Rove is on the cover of Newsweek and Time, and if he doesn't go down, he's going to go up. And I hope to hell that he goes down, because I don't need this guy. You know, he's been quietly sort of running the little non-reality that the Republicans have created behind the scenes, and now he's out in front of the cameras, and I want him to go down so bad, and I think that we have proof that we'll definitely send him down. I mean, federal prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald is going to do his best. This guy goes after the worst of them. He's gone after Bin Laden, the Gambino crime family. I mean, hopefully he'll be able to take down Rove, and Joe Wilson, I'm sure, would be happy if that happened. We'll talk to him at the top of the hour. Stay with us. It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark. It's 46 past the hour.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio. CNN's 25th anniversary, Morning Sedition is proud to present Great Moments in Journalism on CNN.
And you're looking at some rescuers on the rocks beside a rapidly moving river. On the right-hand part of your screen, you'll see the object of their attention right now, which is a woman, there you go, stuck in the rocks there with her pooch. We presume it's her pooch. Maybe she went to rescue the dog. We don't know the full story just yet, but they're attempting to figure out how to safely get pooch and woman safely to shore there. And anyway, now the woman is on her way to safety. We don't know the circumstances that ended with them being in the middle of that raging rapids on the rocks as the dog came off the rocks. Didn't want a dog paddle there very well, did he? Looks like a shepherd mix, maybe. And that's what you just saw, right here, live on CNN. No story too small or too large for us.
This has been Great Moments in Journalism on CNN, brought to you by Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It is Morning Sedition. It is 52 past the hour. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Hey, folks, we'll be returning to Park Slope, Brooklyn this Friday for another live broadcast. Freddie Johnson will be there to play some live music. We'll be giving away tons of free stuff. Johnny K Street, Milf Cardinal Milfigden will stop by. That'll be at the Tea Lounge again in Park Slope, Brooklyn on Union Street between 6th and 7th Avenues this Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. I want to thank everybody who came down to Florent, Restaurant Florent. I want to thank Florent, the owner. He called himself the queen of the meatpacking.
The queen of the meatpacking.
And also everybody that was involved in that broadcast who helped us out down there.
A lot of fun.
It was fun, and a lot of people came out. It was packed by
there were people on the street.
Yeah, it was good times. They had speakers on the street. It was like a party, man. So look, in a few minutes we're going to be talking to Ambassador Joe Wilson right here on our very own air. If you want to hear what Joe Wilson had to say a little over a year ago, May 6, 2004, about what is going on around him, around his wife's identity as a CIA operative, and that whether or not Karl Rove leaked it or not, this is what Joe Wilson had to say a little over a year ago on our show.
If the president truly wants to get to the bottom of it, the first place he ought to go is Karl Rove's office. The investigation really starts with him. This is a political act. It was an un-American act, frankly. It was despicable.
That's right. It compromised national security. Now, here's what Matthew Cooper, the Time magazine writer who spoke to the federal grand jury last week, has written a piece in the New Time magazine about what he said, and he shared some of that on Meet the Press with Tim Russert yesterday.
For the record, the first time you learned that Joe Wilson's wife worked for the CIA was from Karl Rove.
That's correct.
There you go. So Joe Wilson will be here in a few minutes to discuss a little bit more about what is going on. You know, the Republicans have put their entire attack machine, you know, onto him, trying to discredit him like it makes a damn difference. At this point, the case has got nothing to do with Wilson. Wilson has nothing to hide. All they're trying to do is distract. The truth of the matter is this goes to Karl Rove's office. This goes to Scooter Libby's office. This goes to President Bush. This goes to Dick Cheney. There's no way Dick Cheney couldn't have known what the hell was going on. He was going to the CIA at the time every other day talking to George Tenet. George Tenet said that the yellowcake uranium was not something they should put in the State of the Union address. It was a lie. It was unsubstantiated. Joe Wilson, the first guy to come public with that, to reveal the first of the many lies that were used to justify a war in Iraq that has now killed about 1,767 members of the U.S. military. It's killed tens of thousands of Iraqi civilians, thousands of Americans and Iraqis have been injured in what is turning into a civil war that is unwinnable on a military basis, and this was based on lies. The only thing that Joe Wilson did was say that this particular, this particular reason that you're going to Iraq is a lie, and I'm going to say that because my reputation is on the line. And in response to that, George Bush, Dick Cheney allowed Karl Rove to out Ambassador Joe Wilson's wife as a CIA operative as a personal vendetta to teach him a lesson and to, you know, to try to stifle those kind of actions from any other people that would be critical of the lies that they were putting in place to justify this war.
Well, you know, people ought to remember as well that, this was during a very, very heated time in America as this run-up to the war was taking place. And the administration obviously was prepared to brook no criticism. And remember, too, that they have admitted publicly, several administration figures, including, by the way, our Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, have admitted that the yellow cake story was false. It had no business being in George W. Bush's State of the Union address in early 2000.
And I think this guy, Patrick Fitzgerald, this federal prosecutor, he's got a history of being tough. And I think he's surprising the administration. I think they don't know what's going to happen. And I think really what we're seeing is a panicky, you know, Oval Office, a panicky White House, you know, because if Karl Rove goes down, George Bush's reputation, which is already compromised, goes down with him. And also the future of the Republican Party is not as confident as they'd like it to be.
I think they're starting to smell a much bigger rat than Karl Rove. And I think that Patrick Fitzgerald, is going to keep digging. It reminds me of a movie I saw a long, long time ago when I was in high school, a movie called Z, where they had a prosecutor who started out looking at certain issues and then began to expand to look at government malfeasance and paid the price for it.
Well, this expansion in this case, there's speculations that it could get even bigger, that the scope of this investigation could get bigger. Why don't we talk to Ambassador Joe Wilson about where it's at and how he feels, the progress being made against his nemesis Karl Rove is coming along. That's coming up next here on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. It's 57 past the hour. Good morning.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
On Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I hope you're having a decent day out there. It's Monday. It's been a little, rough getting up today, but we're very excited about our next guest. Our guest here questioned the Bush administration's rationale for the war in Iraq. Someone in the administration responded by leaking his wife's status as a CIA operative to the press, an act that many described as treasonous. We described it that way right here on this show many times last week. That leak is now under investigation by a federal prosecutor, with Bush's top advisor Karl Rove emerging as a prime suspect. Our guest is the author of The Politics of Truth, Inside the Lies That Led to War and Betrayed My Wife's CIA Identity. He was ambassador to Iraq during the Bush 1 administration. Good morning, Ambassador Joe Wilson. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys today?
Good morning, Ambassador.
Well, we're excited to talk to you because, man, we've been just going crazy here. It seems that, if I could play this for our listeners, that yesterday Matthew Cooper, the Time magazine writer who testified to the grand jury, said this on Tim Russert's show.
For the record, the first time you learned that Joe Wilson's wife worked for the CIA was from Karl Rove.
That's correct.
All right, so there we go. We've got proof. Are you happy with how this investigation is unfolding, Joe Wilson?
Well, I've always had confidence in both the special prosecutor and, frankly, in the institutions of government. This has always been a nation of laws, and no man is above the law. So I've always felt that this would unfold at some point.
Patrick Fitzgerald's got some teeth, though. He seems like he's going to go for it.
Well, he's a serious, serious prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one needs to, show some respect for the career public servants who do this work on behalf of the American citizens.
Ambassador Wilson, there has been widespread speculation that the special prosecutor here is looking and investigating something beyond simply the outing of your wife or Karl Rove. What do you think he's looking at?
Well, I haven't talked to the special prosecutor in almost a year and a half. I spoke to him once shortly after he was appointed, and that's the last time I've talked to him or from really anybody on his prosecutorial team. So I don't know. But I think that there is more there. It's pretty clear that there were a number of people talking about this, and a strategy was developed to leak Valerie's name. The fact that Libby and Rove were kind of using the same language seems that they'd set out their talking points and indeed how they were going to phrase it. I read today in the LA Times that one of the reasons they did this was Rove said he's a Democrat, speaking of me, as if being a Democrat is being a member of a subhuman species, not fit to be an American.
What about that smear on you? That they've just been, coming at you all week with all these talking points and all this crap. And, it's just like it's really they're trying to set you up as a MacGuffin, as a smokescreen of this whole thing, huh?
Well, at the end of the day, Valerie, myself, Judy Miller, Matt Cooper, we're all collateral damage.
Mm-hmm.
The big cover-up here, and the one that they're desperately trying to protect, is the web of lies that got us into war under false pretenses and has resulted in 1,763 American deaths and over 10,000 injuries, and Lord knows how many thousands of Iraqis who have been killed, injured, and displaced.
Exactly.
Now, Ambassador, let me pick up on what you just said, because there has been some speculation that there was a widespread, organized effort and, in fact, an apparatus in place to discredit anyone, whether it be you or whether it be people who were on talk shows or whatever, anyone who had the temerity to be critical of the ramp up to the war. Is that too Orwellian to think?
Well, anybody who has read Bush's Brain, the book by Jim Moore, will know that it was a book about Karl Rove, will know that's Karl Rove's modus operandi. And I think you're actually seeing it play out again in this sort of last throes of a desperate man sending Ken Mellman out to do the stuff that he's been doing this weekend, smearing and then whining about some fictional smear campaign being launched against his man, Rove.
We're talking to Ambassador Joseph Wilson, whose wife, Valerie Plame, was outed by Karl Rove. Now, Karl Rove is on the cover of Time. He's on the cover of Newsweek. We've got reports, as you always said, that Scooter Libby was involved. Is there any way in your head, is there any way that Dick Cheney and George Bush aren't completely complicit in this if Rove and Libby go down?
Well, I certainly hope that they were not informed. The White House has a staff, and part of the staff responsibility is to protect the institution of the presidency and the vice presidency. It would be a shame, it would be deeply troubling, I believe, if what is started out as a political smear became a constitutional crisis.
Now, let me ask you another question, because it's sort of, I've been, reading a lot about what's been going on in the last week. In terms of your trip to Niger, was that, how could Dick Cheney not have known about that?
Well, he would not have known about the trip. The way this transpired is he would ask a simple question of the CIA briefer.
Right.
What do we know about this? Can we get more information? Something along those lines. That would then be translated into action at the CIA operational level. Dick Cheney wouldn't need to know about the trip. He would just want to have an answer.
Oh, I get it. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Ambassador, I saw one of the talk shows yesterday where a journalist said that if Karl Rove is not indicted as a result of this grand jury process, the story, as it has turned out, will die. Do you agree with that?
Well, I don't know if the story will die out, and I don't know if Karl Rove won't be indicted. I think that one of the points that I keep trying to make is quite apart from the legal aspects of the case, which are really Pat Fitzgerald has the last word on that, is this whole question of whether or not it's appropriate for the White House to be used as a command center for a political smear campaign. I find it an outrageous abuse of power.
Absolutely. And you were, you know, you worked for George Bush Sr., who actually wrote to congratulate you on your service and to sympathize with your wife's identity was leaked. I mean, you know that president. Now, what do you think he thinks about the actions of in his son's administration and or maybe even his son at this point?
Well, I know the president. I have great admiration for the first President Bush. I served with him in Baghdad and as ambassador to African countries. I know that he deplores the leaks of covert officers. He said that publicly. He's called those who would leak the names of covert sources are the most insidious of traitors. I have not spoken to him about this, but I can't imagine that he's very happy. How could anybody be very happy to see the White House in such a pickle?
Ambassador Wilson, do you take this entire affair personally? This happened to you. It happened to your wife. I assume it has had a really devastating impact on you. How do you not take it personally?
Well, the larger issue really for me is how do we govern ourselves? And the lesson in this for me is that we have to be better stewards of our democracy. Am I happy about what they did to Valerie? Absolutely not. Am I happy about the smear campaign that Ken Mellman continues to launch against me, which is so full of lies that they're very easily debunked? No, I'm not happy about that at all. But I think we have to keep our eyes focused on the ball and figure out who really are the victims in all of this. It's our democracy, it's the American people, and most immediately, it's those who have paid the ultimate sacrifice for this war that was given to us on false pretenses.
Well, you know, thank you very much, Ambassador Joe Wilson, for being with us here today. I really appreciate you talking about this. Don't you think, one quick question before I go, because you talk about Ken Mellman, it just seems to me that, you know, all this slander and all this, trying to make it about you is sort of a desperate thing because it seems that there are a lot of Republicans that are distancing themselves from this situation.
Well, the argument that I made on Face the Nation yesterday was that 6 days after, or 7 days after, that we have documentary evidence that Karl Rove was the source, not one single Republican of national stature has bothered to get up, stand up, and even say that this was wrong. That's what I'm concerned about more than whether or not they're distancing himself from Mellman. I do believe that he has put the Republican Party in a very difficult position because he has tied the Republican Party to the future of Karl Rove, and I don't think that future is very bright.
Oh, great. Well, that's good news for us here. I appreciate, again, you being with us, Ambassador Joseph Wilson, and hopefully the resolution of this thing will get to the truth.
Well, I certainly hope so, and I have full confidence that Fitzgerald will get to the bottom of this.
Great. Thanks a lot. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Ambassador.
Wow. He's got a lot of confidence in this prosecutor, and that makes me confident that hopefully this will result in some indictments and in some revelations about this heinous administration.
You know, he's confident of the system, but the system has been twisted here. And I think we ought never lose sight of the fact that people, for their own ends, for their own political ends, have twisted the system that so many of us are bound to trust.
Well, you know, when we continue our conversation here, we'll talk a little bit about Iraq. We're going to talk about Mad Cow perhaps coming back into this country. Well, no, it's not that it's here, but they've opened the borders up to Canadian beef again. And also, Little League coach that actually paid one of his players to beat up a mentally challenged kid.
Ooh.
Yeah, let's talk about that when we come back at 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
21 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hiya.
It's Monday morning. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. How's that grab you? Everything all right with that? You know, our friend, you know, the love-hate thing we have, the tough love relationship we've had with Lawton Smalls, our Planet Bush correspondent, has taken a turn for the peculiar and the frightening. He was in Iraq on the Truth Tour with that junket of third-tier right-wing radio personalities going to suss out the truth for us in Iraq. Lawton went along as a representative of Air America, and apparently, if we were to understand him properly, he was sort of set up by the other right-wingers to be lost in the desert. And our last conversation was picked up by unidentified, I'm assuming, Arabic people, and kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
And it's frightening, but we got some sort of dispatch from him on tape through the mail, and this is Lawton Smalls being held hostage in Iraq.
People of America, this is Lawton Smalls. I am speaking of my own free will.
Mm.
Well, I am a CIA agent and a puppet of the great Satan, George W.
Two terms mandate.
Bush. He is a buffoon and a failure. The man cannot even stay on a bicycle. That's just mean, isn't it?
That's just mean.
Your illegal occupation of Iraq is doomed. You are running out of troops and money. You must send $50 million.
Really? Wow, that seems like a lot.
in small unmarked bills to the address on the package, or I, Lawton Smalls, CIA agent and stooge of the great Satan, will be...
Do I have to say this?
Executed. There is no God but God.
Well, that's true. I mean, we agree on one thing anyway.
Oh, okay. Salam alaikum. Salam alaikum. Deal with it. Thank you.
I'll tell you, to his credit, he didn't start crying, you know, which is usually,
that's one of his hallmarks.
Yeah, he'll definitely start crying. Let's get a couple of stories in here. In Pittsburgh, a T-ball coach allegedly paid one of his players $25 to hurt an 8-year-old mentally disabled teammate so he wouldn't have to put the kid in the game. How awful is that? That coach is awful.
I don't know if people realize how awful that actually is.
It's not even real Little League. It's T-ball.
It's T-ball. And, you know, a guy wants to win so bad at T-ball that he would injure, he would deliberately pay someone to injure a kid?
He told the kid to hit him with a baseball on the head because he didn't want the kid bringing the team down. He told the kid to go hit the kid the baseball on the head. Police said the kid was hit in the head and in the groin. So some evil little kid, at the behest of his even more evil coach, smacks his retarded kid in the head with a ball and then throws a ball at his. You know what I mean? What is this? This guy should be a poster made of him, a story written about him that just describes the most evil possible thing. This should be a children's book. about the evil T-ball coach. It has it pays a guy and one of the kids $25 to hit the mentally challenged kid with a ball so he wouldn't have to play. Just awful. It's like some sort of parable. Just a few more papers to process, and Canadian beef can be brought into the country again. This ban has been in place since May 2003 after a mad cow was found here that was brought in from Canada.
Uh-huh.
The U.S. will reopen the border to cattle younger than 30 months and expand the number of beef products that Canada can ship. Older animals are still banned because they're more likely to get sick. I don't understand how this happens. We didn't even settle this other thing. There was a second case found here. The USDA guy, Johannes, has said that this is going to be, this is all about money, Riley. It's all about money.
Of course it's all about money.
They've had a couple of cases up there, a couple of cases here. I believe there's more here, and they're just going to let these cows in. Thank God I'm not eating meat. My wife, again, every time she comes into town, it's like, you know, she can't stop stuffing beef in her mouth.
Really?
No, but I mean, like, meat.
I mean, no. I mean, like, regular meat. Like, we're walking. We go out the other night.
Like a burger or something.
She had a New York strip at Steak Frites the other night. And then she's sort of like, you know, I need some cold cuts. I need some, like, and we're walking. They have a street fair. They had the sausage and onion street fair. She's always like, wouldn't it be great to have some sausage and onions? I'm like, what are you trying to do to me? I'm going to eat meat, man.
I will not fear my meat.
Yeah, I know. But I do fear it, Chris. North Korea is willing to, apparently on Monday, they said it won't give up nuclear weapons without receiving anything in exchange, and called on the United States to agree at these revived arms talks to peacefully coexist with the communist state. God, like, wonder if that's going to happen.
Well,
we want to keep the weapons, and we just want you to know that we're going to keep them, and you'll have yours, and we'll have ours, and it'll all be cool. Fortunately, we have a guest that can address this directly. Ambassador Wendy Sherman joins us by phone to discuss North Korea and the resumption of six-party talks. She worked on North Korea during the Clinton years. We'll ask her at what point the Bush administration has to stop blaming Clinton and actually take responsibility for its failure on North Korea. That's coming up, Wendy Sherman, Ambassador Wendy Sherman. So this should be a very informative conversation. Stay here. It's Air America Radio's Mornings Edition, 27 past the hour.
You're listening to Mornings Edition on Air America Radio.
Hey, it's 34 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Pretty soon we're going to have Mort Mortensen come out here with the morning remembrance. How will that be? That'll be good. Won't it, Riley?
Yes, it will.
I wonder who died this week and how we can make it funny.
Oh.
Okay, our guest. During the Clinton administration, our next guest served as a special advisor to President Clinton and Secretary of State Madeleine Albright on North Korea. Please welcome Ambassador Wendy Sherman to the show. Good morning, Ambassador.
Good morning, Mark and Mark.
Good morning.
So North Korea has been convinced to get back into these six-party talks, but these talks have been going on and off for, like, years. Now, how did George Bush's administration screw this thing up?
Well, I think you've probably put it quite succinctly. when President Clinton came into office, North Korea had enough plutonium, the material used for nuclear bombs, had about 1 to 2 bombs worth of plutonium that they had produced during the first senior President Bush administration. During the Clinton administration, we negotiated an agreed framework to get them to stop reprocessing that plutonium so that they couldn't make more bombs. But then when George Bush came into office, he decided he wanted to take a harder line than the Clinton administration did. And lo and behold, he took a harder line, and North Korea has now produced enough plutonium for 4, 6, 8 nuclear weapons. So we've gone from 1 or 2 at the beginning of the Clinton administration, from the senior Bush administration, to probably 6 to 8
and of
five
course,
years into the Bush administration.
And, of course, they'll still blame Clinton because that's what they do.
Well, indeed, that is what they do. But I think that even they understand that things have gotten out of hand here. And, yes, North Korea has come back to the six-party talks, which is a good thing. But so far we've had 4 years of talks about talks. The Bush administration hasn't been able to get agreement within the administration, and the president hasn't yielded a firm hand to actually have true negotiations. And I'm hoping that Ambassador Chris Hill, who's now the senior envoy for the United States, who is a negotiator, will wrestle some actual negotiating authority out of President Bush and Secretary Rice. And when they meet again, probably July 26th, we'll actually get down to some real negotiations, not just talks about talks.
Ambassador Wendy Sherman, it seems as though the North Korean government reacts very badly to the Bush administration's, demonization of it. How much of that is real? I mean, at a certain point, are these people as bad as Condoleezza Rice and George W. Bush say they are?
Well, you know, I think that name-calling only begets name-calling, and it really doesn't produce what you want. It's very satisfying to call Kim Jong-il, the chairman of North Korea, and its leader, names. And, in fact, North Korea is not a place where you or I or any of your listeners would want to live. There are no rights. There are no freedoms. There is no economy. There is very little future. But that name-calling isn't going to get his nuclear weapons out of his hands. And so you have to keep your eye on the ball in diplomacy, decide what it is you really want, and sort of swallowing hard and giving him a little bit of respect because he is the leader of a sovereign country is not such a hard thing to do if, in fact, it finally gets the result you want.
Ambassador, exactly what is it that Kim Jong-il wants? We've heard talk about electricity in terms of the South Koreans. There's been talk about food, of course, in terms of the United States. What exactly is it that the North Korean government wants in exchange for curbing its nuclear program?
First, second, and third, North Korea wants its regime to survive, wants the country to survive the way it is. Yes, they want electricity because they have virtually none. And yes, they want food because many, many people have starved to death and there's severe malnutrition. Probably 37% of their young people are stunted in growth and intellectual ability because of the lack of food. And those things are important. Its economy is important. But first and foremost, Kim Jong-il wants to survive. And quite frankly, even though we all thought at one point that that regime might collapse, it has proved to be quite sustainable. And I think really the real opportunity for reform is to open the borders. As President Kim Dae-jung, the former president of South Korea, said, let a little sunshine in, and slowly but surely reforms will take place. And North Korea, as we know it today, will change over time, much as China did.
So you think that with a savvy negotiator or somebody that is willing to actually be somewhat diplomatic and make a deal, that Kim Jong-il will be open to that?
Well, I think we don't know the answer to that question. It has gone so long and it has gotten so bad between the United States and North Korea. North Korea believes the United States is the only country that can guarantee its survival because we're the last remaining superpower, the only one with a military that could do it. And so it's not clear whether they will go for their nuclear weapons program, but the only way to find out is to test their intentions through a negotiation. I hope they will. It's really the only way for the regime to survive. But things have gotten so bad under the Bush administration, I don't think any of us know anymore.
What part did Undersecretary for Arms Control and International Security John Bolton play in this? Any?
He played a very destructive role. He believed in a very hard line. He didn't believe you should negotiate with Kim Jong-il. He thought these are bad people. We shouldn't have anything to do with them. He really stopped efforts at every point to have negotiations and diplomacy, and we're all going to pay the price for it.
Ambassador, do you think that the North Korean government believes that America's end game is to have a single nation on the Korean Peninsula? In other words, the eventual elimination of North Korea?
I think that North Korea is very concerned that the United States does not want this regime to survive. They have watched the Bush administration go into Iraq and oust Saddam Hussein. They have watched even the Clinton administration take on Milosevic in the former Yugoslavia. And what they take from those military interventions is that the only way to ensure their survival is to have nuclear weapons because it's the only deterrence against the United States. Neither Milosevic nor Saddam Hussein had nuclear weapons, and what the North Koreans take from that is it's no way to survive. So they're going to strike a very tough deal, and the United States has to strike a very tough and verifiable deal if we're going to get out of the mess that we're in.
Ambassador, where is Pyongyang getting their nuclear materials? Is the U.S. government clear about that?
Well, I don't think we're entirely clear about that. It's been a long history. They have had help from many people along the way many, many years ago during the former Soviet Union. They got engineering help from the Russians. They've clearly gotten a lot of help from Pakistan. We know that A.Q. Khan, who is really the father of nuclear power in Pakistan and now under house arrest for really proliferating nuclear materials all over the world, was a big help to North Korea and probably very, very critical to their nuclear program.
Yeah, that guy sent out like starter kits all over the place.
Indeed he did. It's a great way to put it, and it's one of the things I wish the Bush administration were even tougher about, which is getting Pakistan to allow the U.S. access to AQCon because there are a lot of secrets he has that we need to know.
Yeah, we've got to empty his head. So now you've met Kim Jong-il. I guess it's a very vague question, but what were your initial impressions of him as a person?
Well, before Secretary Albright and I went to North Korea to meet Kim Jong-il, we, of course, had heard everything that everybody else had heard, that he was crazy, he was a lunatic, he was a drunkard, he was a womanizer, all kinds of things. But we had fortunately been able to speak with President Kim Dae-jung and Lim Dong-won, his aide who had spent many hours with Kim Jong-il, and we learned that although he's clearly almost like the leader of a cult and very clear and confident about himself, shall we say, he actually is smart. One can hold a perfectly seemingly rational conversation with him. He can be influenced and change his mind. There's no question that he has a very narrow view of the world because he lives in a very isolated world. He travels very little. He does go on the Internet. He does have all the Academy Award-winning movies, and he is a movie buff. But he is a smart man and clearly has played a very weak hand very well.
Well, thank you for joining us, Ambassador Wendy Sherman. I really appreciate the information you've shared with us today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ambassador.
You have a good day.
Maybe we need to send Brendan McDonald over there. I mean, one movie buff to another, huh?
And just to have that be a hilarious show, Brendan and Kim Jong-il, just reviewing movies.
Yeah. Nah, that stunk!
Brendan got in my head during that segment and said that Kim Jong-il has one of the largest porn collections on the planet.
Really? How does he know?
Here he comes. He's coming in here.
Uh-oh.
Where'd you hear about that, Brendan P.W. McDonald?
I think that was a Vanity Fair article that I read that in. But apparently he is a huge movie buff. He loves, his favorite movie is Titanic. And when he saw that, DiCaprio, it made him cry. And the people around him were like, you know, dear leader, you know, is everything okay? Why'd you cry? He said, that DiCaprio, he's fantastic.
Well, he'll never work in Hollywood again now.
But a gigantic porn collection, mostly Asian porn, and he regards it in the same way that he regards regular movies. It's all cinema.
Yeah. I wonder if he's the overseeing production of any. You know what I mean?
See, the lighting on that one needs a little work.
Well, a guy with that much power, it wouldn't seem out of the realm to get some of that Kim Jong-il porn.
And apparently, according to that puppet movie, he's also a very lonely guy.
I knew somebody. What was that
this
movie?
You know what's horrible about this conversation? It's like, we just get off the phone with the ambassador. Like, all right, it's okay. Now we've got the real stuff out of the way. What about the porno stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I hope she's not listening. All right.
Debbie does Pyongyang. Oh, what are we talking about here?
Oh, good one there, Riley. Here we go. We got Mort Mortensen coming up with the morning remembrance. That's next. So it's worth listening to. It's 45 past the hour. Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition on the air and online. Morning'sEdition.com. Air America Radio.
Fifty past the hour, America Radio's Morning Sedition program with Mark and Mark. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yeah.
How do you like that? Hope you're having a pretty good Monday morning. Are you having a good Monday morning there, Mort? Look, folks, unfortunately, it's that time of week again when we here in Morning Sedition take a moment at this time of sorrow to reflect in our morning remembrance.
As the people of a grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning Sedition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
Oh,
already, huh?
Yeah. Bertram Given, inventor of the garbage disposal. Bertram F. Given, who in 1945 invented the Waste King garbage disposal, passed away this month after 60 years of watching his work go down the drain.
Yeah.
Immon died tragically while personally demonstrating his ill-conceived introgenator. A powerful chopping suction device used to collect and pulverize discarded condoms at the bottom of hot tubs.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I know.
It's sad, man.
It is very sad. Man, it's disturbing. Kevin first came up with the idea for the garbage disposal while trying to invent a more efficient way for children to maim themselves while searching for their father's lost Rolex in the sink pipe. You know how often that happens.
Yeah,
you know,
it happens all the time. If it's not a Rolex, it's a spoon or maybe...
A ring?
Yeah, sure, rings. Yeah, like sad. That. It's horrendous.
Oh,
God. You need some Kleenex?
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, you know, you've been chopping parsley?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, parsley really does throw to my eyes.
Parsley, garlic, fresh rosemary.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right. Angela sauce. Things like that. Always hip to his times, Mark.
Yeah.
Gibbon once told reporters in 1966, quote, "What women want in the kitchen is automation, cleanability, interchangeability, and durability. Or acid." A-C-I-D.
Yeah, right on, brother.
Gibbon requested his remains be chopped into very small pieces with stainless steel blades, driven by a 2-horsepower, high-torque, insulated electric motor, so they can be safely flow through the plumbing without clogging it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's horrendous.
I know. Man. John T. Walton, heir to the Walmart fortune.
Mm.
Walmart board member John T. Walton rolled back prices for the last time last month after rolling his airplane at high speed into the Grand Teton National Park. According to a company spokesman, the Walmart executive was apparently scouting endangered grizzly bear populations for cheap non-union labor. Last March, Walton was listed by Forbes magazine as the world's 11th richest person, in addition to being one of the only three people in the world who would build an ugly, life-sucking superstore with an eye view of a sacred pre-Columbian pyramid. Yeah.
You don't have a lot of sadness for this, do you?
Sadness? What are you talking about? I have allergies. Things wrong with my eyes. People are chopping onions. It's not sadness.
I'm sorry, buddy. I'm sorry.
Walton died in an experimental ultralight aircraft wrapped in a fabric similar to the heavy-duty tents many Walmart employees have to live in outside the store.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
Maybe you should blow the nose again.
Thank you very much.
Because you get a little congested.
Let it flow.
Good Walmart paper.
I think it might because I'm not wearing socks. Maybe that's what's getting you.
Maybe. How often do you wash those things?
My feet or the sandals?
Those are sandals? God, we're in mandals. Mandals?
They're not mandals.
They're mandals. You get in, goes with your man bag.
Flip-flops.
Flip-flops. I don't call flip-flops anymore.
Get on with it.
Gut gum? In loving tribute to Walton's memory, Walmart's worldwide employees were issued an extra cup of gruel and a limited access to the fire exits. this has been this week's Morning Remembrance. Until next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying, chopping onions.
That was a good one. Wow, Mort. So,
chew.
You all right?
Yeah.
Did you have a good weekend? What did you do this weekend?
What did I do this weekend?
Yeah.
I slept a lot.
Yeah?
And I did a lot of research for this story. Very important.
You're going to be all right, man?
I'm all right.
Yeah. I just hate to see you so broken up so early.
Well, I'm keeping up with all the current events and stuff.
Yeah.
This Roe thing has really got me down.
Yeah.
What's happening to our country?
I know, exactly.
A lot of suspended particulates in the air.
Yeah.
It's really bad for you.
Wouldn't it be exciting if Roe died?
Of laughter? Why can't you guys be positive? What's wrong with you people? You're always so negative in the morning edition. Morning edition? Is it edition or sedition?
Sedition.
I don't read anything. I don't even look at the website
anymore.
You're
a little punchy today. You came in right out of bed. It was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Your hair was all silly. And Yeah, you know.
Some of us like staying in bed, if you know what I mean.
All right, buddy.
You got something to do there.
All right, buddy.
That was an unkind cut. That's all I can say.
It's great to see you.
Let's have some more Salisbury steak, Stinky.
Oh, he doesn't need no meat.
Yeah, I don't need no red meat.
Yeah.
Who are you talking to, Willis?
I had to lash out on somebody.
Oh, okay.
It's interesting that you've stayed in character the entire time this time. We haven't broken character. We've not gotten into the Jim and Mark dynamic. We've stayed with Mort the whole time. That's because you're a little tired. It's easier than being you, isn't it, hiding behind a character?
Maybe it's because I'm a true artist. Some of us, you know, live their work instead of work to live.
Oh, boy. Get out. Now you're going to set many people speculating about our relationship. Oh, a little sad sneeze to finish it. So, look, you know, what have we got to tell you coming up? We are going to talk, obviously, about Iraq, obviously about Karl Rove. We're going to have a Barry Yorgrow come in here. He's written a book called The Nasty Book for Children, which I'm just going to leave at that because I'm going to have to read it on on our break. So I can figure out. No, I'm kidding. I've read it cover to cover twice, and it's upside down. Barry Yorgrow will be here. We will. You know, what I really want to talk about, though, Riley, is some of the stuff we haven't talked about yet, which is the Village People cop was arrested and had a gun and some coke on him.
Yeah, I know. And he lives in a trailer park. Very strange.
And we do need to talk a little bit about the London bombers because apparently they made a phone call to a guy down the street from me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get into that and a whole lot more. Next, here on Morning's Edition, this is Air America Radio.
Seasons don't feel the Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Blah, 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 blah.
That's right. It's 6 past the hour. It's Morning's Edition here on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
How's it going, Riley?
It's going, man.
All right, buddy.
I mean, it's Monday, so, you know, it only goes, but so good on
Monday. And it's raining, and it's humid. Man, the humidity was killing me.
Oh, man,
yesterday.
It was awful.
Killing me.
And it's supposed to be like this for the next couple of days.
Yeah. Oh, I went out for like 5 minutes. They have one of those street fairs where they sell socks and sausage.
Socks and sausage.
That's all they sell at these street fairs in New York City. You go, they got a couple of new things. They got the roasted corn on the cob and bracelets and crap.
That
and
fried mozzarella stuff, too?
Yeah, they got all that. And I just went out because I need to do some shopping for the week. And, you know, when the humidity just melts you get outside, you're like, oh, my God, I'm exhausted. It's just taking all of my energy away.
Well, just be glad you weren't working behind the counter at one of those sausage joints because you'd have a hot frying pan in front of you in all that heat and humidity all day.
Wow, man. There's something about cooking that makes me excited, though. There was a moment you just said that. I'm like, I wouldn't mind having my own little truck and cooking some stuff. I made some... I'm making some hippie food, man.
What are you making?
Like, I'm like the hippie food guy these days. Just like I should.
Just some Alice's Restaurant action.
Well, it is. It's just like brown rice, stir fried vegetables. It's like it's nauseating me. My poor wife's having flashbacks. I think that's why she eats so much meat and stuff that I don't eat now that she's not here because she grew up. Her parents were kind of hippies, so I'm making this brown rice stir fry stuff. She's like, no, I will eat cold cuts in front of you all day long.
Oh my God!
All right, so here we go. This is some interesting stuff. One of the bombers in last week's attacks in London made a direct phone call to a suspected recruiter for an extremist group, apparently right down the street from me in Queens, right off the Van Wyck. Apparently is where the guy was a member of this Islamic center. Mohammed Sadiq Khan, the eldest of the bombers and thought to be the commander of the attacks, had called a person associated with the Islamic center, which is right there in Queens. Apparently, a member of the center claimed that he had no knowledge of the call, but I don't know what it means. Another bomber, the Jamaican-born bomber, Lindsay Germain, who actually left behind a pregnant wife, he recently was in Ohio visiting relatives. This is the weird thing about these bombers, which makes me very nervous. Now, I know there's still a very small percentage of people that are involved in this, a small percentage of Muslims, but they just live these regular lives on some level. He's going to visit relatives. He's got a pregnant wife. He obviously wasn't completely planning to do what he's going to do. It just something activated, and he went out and blew everybody up.
You know, there are questions back in London, Mark, about how much these guys knew about their suicide bomber status. In fact, that same guy, Lindsey Germain, the guy who went to visit relatives in Ohio, left a 7-day parking permit on his car, the one that he parked at the Luton station. The other folks who had been involved in this apparently had bought round-trip tickets to ride the train from Luton to King's Cross.
So this might be similar. This might be jiving with your speculation that they were set up in a way.
Well, they knew they were. They obviously knew that they were going to be carrying bombs. I just don't know if they knew that they were actually going to be suicide bombers. Yeah. I have questions. I mean, again, investigators in London are saying, no, they must have known. But these are not that. Why would you buy a round-trip ticket? Just to divert suspicion? Would you put a 7-day sticker on your car because you didn't want them to see? Now, mind you, the trunk of the car was full of explosives, but why would you buy a 7-day permit if you weren't going to be around ever to retrieve the car?
Well, we'll be curious to see if they get any more, facts on this.
Yeah.
Hey, here we go. After asking whether or not there was a statute of limitations on genocide, Saddam Hussein was charged. He has been charged. The Iraqi Special Tribunal set up to try Saddam said in a statement yesterday that Hussein and three others will be referred to criminal court on charges relating to the killings of about 150 Shiites in the Iraqi town of Dujail in 1982. This is apparently the town in which an assassination attempt was thwarted by Hussein. I mean, they tried to kill him in this town. And apparently right after his motorcade was shot upon, he killed about 150 people. He shot a few people, and then years later, 3 years later, 150 people were executed by Hussein's Revolutionary Court. This is just one case, obviously. There are many other charges that are expected to be levied against him.
Well, yeah, and I mean, this is apparently the tip of the iceberg. I don't know how this guy, I mean, assuming that the Iraqi constitution permits capital punishment, I don't know how he escapes it at this point. I mean, there's a possibility that he will be tried, for example, about a campaign that took place in the late 80s against the Kurds. There were supposedly 150,000 Kurds killed, chemical weapons attack on the
Kurdish towns.
Again, 5,000 people killed there. The repression of the Shiite rebellion in southern Iraq back in 1991. Reports of 150,000 people killed.
150,000, man.
You know, this is the kind of thing that will get you certainly executed in any place that has capital punishment if they convict him of the crimes.
Why? How are they not going to convict him of the crimes?
Depends on what kind of defense he puts up.
Oh, come on.
I don't know. I don't know that much about Iraqi jurisprudence. I wouldn't want to be in his shoes.
150,000 people.
Yeah.
Apparently, in the months before the Iraqi elections in January, President Bush approved a plan to provide covert support to certain Iraqi candidates and political parties, but then rescinded the proposal because Congress had the sense to realize that it wasn't very democratic and would look bad. So he basically said, why don't we just secretly, get our guys in. So who the hell knows? It might have included voting machines and smear campaigns. I don't know. But apparently Cy Hirsch, who's one of the few great journalists around who actually does the job, in a report coming out in New Yorker this month, said that that they went ahead and did it anyways. Hirsch claims with the support of anonymous administration officials that they went ahead with the covert plans despite congressional objections. The covert election activities were undertaken by retired CIA officers and other non-government personnel and used funds that were not necessarily appropriated by Congress. The report doesn't go into details about the methods and the scope of the operations because they were hard to discern. And oddly, we're having the same problem here in Ohio.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting how the administration reacts because, you know, Cy Hirsch might as well be Joe Wilson in terms of the way the Bush people react to the stuff that he does. And in this case, they're saying, well, the part that he wrote that said that they actually went through with it, that part is totally false. They don't really deny the idea that this was part and parcel of a game plan that the Bush administration had. They just say, well, they never went through with it.
Well, it's interesting. There was this sort of rationalizing that said, you know, that they were trying to keep up with Iranian money coming in to support those candidates who the Bush administration might not have wanted. But the way it is that, you know, what unfolded was a democratically elected, government. It may not be the one he wants, but you know, there was some speculation that, you know, maybe they were saying, look, we gotta put enough money in so to level the playing field. So they were using sort of American campaign tactics and, you know, sort of countering, what is that, soft money,
yeah,
on behalf of the Iranian religious influence,
mm-hmm,
yeah, with their own little money.
That's, well, you know what's fascinating about this, Mark? A lot of the stuff that they're dealing with here, mm-hmm, is classified material.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've seen how little respect the administration has when it comes to classified material on one level. But we see in this instance many people, including Democrats, including, for example, Nancy Pelosi, House Democratic leader, who cites confidentiality, who cites classified information as reasons why they won't comment about their knowledge of this particular little plan of Bush's.
And also, Victor Edward Willis, the original police.
Oh, here we go. You know, who he was married to?
Who?
Felicia Rashad.
That's what I
hear. The woman that was in the Cosby Show.
This was the original policeman for the Village People, was arrested. He was pulled over and didn't have a valid license or ID, and there was a .45 in the car. Apparently some rock cocaine, some drug paraphernalia. He had an outstanding felony warrant for possession of narcotics. Police arrested him on suspicion of 6 felony counts.
Wow.
And he's living in a trailer park outside of San Francisco.
Outside of San Francisco. Wasn't a good day for Victor Willis, that's for sure. I don't know. You know, he, I assume, must still be getting royalties. Macho Man, he wrote. I mean, you know, never mind the persona, because he left the group not long after they kind of hit
it. Well, he's doing something. Yeah, I mean, you don't have rock cocaine in a Corvette from nothing, unless you're selling drugs. Who the hell knows?
But, I mean, rock cocaine, a Corvette, and a trailer park? What's wrong with this picture?
Someone's got his priorities screwed up. All right. It's 15 past the hour. When we come back, we're going to hear from Ambassador Joe Wilson, who was just on our show literally a matter of minutes ago, about the Rove leak, Karl Rove's leak of his wife's name, Valerie Plame. He spoke a little bit, you know, pretty candidly with Mark and I, and we'll hear a bit of that. It's 16 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Now, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. It's Monday morning. I'm feeling that. I'm feeling that, Riley.
You're feeling Monday. But what's the, I mean, we spent the entire weekend here in New York with a blanket over the entire city. It's ridiculous.
Had some good food this weekend, man.
Yeah?
Good food. We went to this sushi place, Blue Ribbon Sushi, and I got this thing. I've got this thing in my head with this. I've been buying the real high-end tuna, the fatty tuna, Otoro. Oh, my God. It's like crack. It's crazy. And it's stupidly expensive. You almost feel stupid for spending money on it. But then it puts a lot of pressure on it to be good. And if it's good, it's pretty exciting.
Now, what does your wife do when you go to a sushi joint? Because she likes T-bone. I mean, they don't sell that in sushi.
No, she likes sushi.
She likes sushi.
Yeah, she loves the sushi. Hey, we know a lot of people out there are out of work, and you probably spent your Sunday leafing through the want ads. So we want to help out. We want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So here at our Morning Sedition, we every Monday we have our Morning Sedition Help Wanted listing. Wanted, Mephistopheles. The right-wing smear, slime, and destroy machine may be looking for a new mechanic. You will be responsible for fixing elections, destroying lives, providing the rationale for disastrous decisions, and dismantling the tattered remnants of the New Deal. Oh, yeah, and running the country. You will be expected to deal with the media and know how to share information without getting caught. Please. The ideal candidate will be able to work with children, particularly these foiled and vacuous children of privilege. Gay individuals are encouraged to apply as long as they adamantly refuse to acknowledge their sexual orientation, especially to themselves. This position comes with health insurance, but requires that you attempt to deny health insurance to every other human being in the country. Please be aware that if you apply for this job and the position does not open up, you will be destroyed.
Ooh.
There you go. So let's get into that. Speaking of Mephistopheles, Karl Rove, hopefully going down. We just had a conversation with Joe Wilson here on our show.
Yes.
You know, talking about essentially that, about the nature of what is going on and the in the White House, and if it's in the White House. Let's just hear this. This is Joe Wilson on our show literally moments ago.
Valerie, myself, Judy Miller, Matt Cooper, we're all collateral damage. The big cover-up here, and the one that they're desperately trying to protect, is the web of lies that got us into war under false pretenses and has resulted in 1,763 American deaths and over 10,000 injuries, and Lord knows how many thousands of Iraqis who have been killed, injured, and displaced.
See, that's Joseph Wilson, Ambassador Joseph Wilson, on our show literally about an hour ago. What he's saying is true. What's important here is to remember that what happened with Karl Rove leaking his wife's name was a personal vendetta. It was meant as a sign to anybody who would dare to contradict the lies put in place by this administration to go to war in Iraq.
You know, he mentions, Mark, the web of lies. Patrick Fitzgerald, this special prosecutor, seems to be trying to figure out exactly how wide that web actually was in the run-up to the war in Iraq. And I think that he's starting to smell that this isn't just about the outing of Valerie Plame, that there may have been something a lot more systemic involved in this.
Who, the prosecutor is starting to get that, Fitzgerald?
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think the investigation is broadening. This guy's got he's got some moxie, man. This guy has gone up against some pretty hard, hardened criminals before. This guy has taken on, he's currently the U.S. attorney in Chicago, but before that he was federal prosecutor in the Southern District of New York.
Right.
He brought charges against figures ranging from the Gambino crime family, the Egyptian cleric sheik Omar Abdul Rahman for the 1993 World Trade Center attack. He's taken on Osama bin Laden for the 1998 African embassy bombings. This guy has got guts. For years, apparently, Fitzgerald has avoided receiving mail at his apartment because of the threat of a letter bomb.
Well, yeah, I think that he had to have. When you start looking at the Gambinos, bin Laden, Rahman, you're talking about folks that if you're prosecuting them, you might want to have a little extra security.
The staff of the 9/11 Commission called Patrick Fitzgerald, the federal prosecutor in the grand jury that is taking on this Karl Rove leaking situation. The staff of the 9/11 Commission called him one of the world's best terrorism prosecutors. Well, that's good because he's dealing with somebody who compromised national security to a degree that some terrorists could only hope for. Karl Rove, by outing Valerie Plame, put at risk, not only did he put her at risk and put the country at risk, and also he put the integrity of the CIA itself, not that it has a lot of integrity these days anyways, but he put that at risk in the sense that one of the only things that intelligence people have told us is that the only way we're going to infiltrate terrorist organizations is with human intelligence, getting people in there, getting undercover people in there. Now, when Karl Rove leaks an undercover agent's name to the press, how is that going to look to people who want to get involved in intelligence? How is that going to feel to people who are operating in undercover situations within the agency, in finding human intelligence or being in compromising situations? This is somebody within the White House administration outing a covert officer in the CIA. He literally compromised the ability of the CIA to do its job, and also the underlings of Valerie Plame and anybody who was involved in her undercover operation could be up to hundreds of people. This guy is just as bad as a terrorist, so it's good that we have someone like Patrick Fitzgerald, you know, going after someone like Karl Rove.
Well, he really did, Rove I'm talking about now, jeopardize each and every person that Valerie Plame worked with, either overtly or covertly. You know, we don't know a lot of times, Mark, as civilians, exactly where the CIA has its tentacles. Sometimes they have people in nonprofit organizations, all different kinds of organizations. When someone is outed as an agent like that, it really has a ripple effect that most of us have no clue how far it goes.
Well, that's just the thing. And the truth of the matter is that they've been trying to make Valerie Plame look like she wasn't really that undercover because she worked from a desk. But
yeah,
she was running a front organization. Corporation. She was one of these covert operatives that, you know, dealt with a fake business that was engaging, you know, in business transactions with people who were involved in WMDs. So it doesn't matter whether where she was or whether she wore a trench coat or not.
No, absolutely not.
Barry Yorgrau is going to be with us, a performance artist, but also now a writer of children's books that are a little edgy.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk to him. It's 27 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Hey, look, you know, this our guest here, he's a jack of all trades. He's a performer, a writer. His latest book, Nasty Book, is for kids. But some you know, mildly twisted dark adults might like it as well. On the break, he's also a sort of off-the-cuff political commentator. We'll get into that, too. Barry Yorgrau is with us. Welcome to the show.
Guys, it's a pleasure to be here. The hour is another issue, but it's a pleasure to be here.
Everyone complains about the hours. Riley and I have been up for since yesterday almost.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just stayed up all night last night.
Did you really?
Absolutely.
When was the last time you did that, you know, without you know, having a good time?
Without help.
Exactly. So this book, now let me just get it straight. You were also a live performer for years. Is that true?
And I still am. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be doing a live thing. What I do is I write stories, mm-hmm. sort of surreal stories, and then I do performances, one-man shows, and I've done, you know, also, like, I do a lot of radio, MTV. I did a movie of one of my books. And then a couple of years ago, I decided it's a great time to be writing for kids.
It is. In terms of a great time in the sense that the author of Harry Potter just made $1 billion yesterday?
I think 6.9 million copies sold. But also, for instance, Lemony Snicket.
Got very popular. I know nothing about it. I don't have kids. I don't read
Harry Potter.
My
daughter's into it, trust me.
No, indeed. Dig it. And a lot of adults are, too. And it's attracting a lot of, you know, a lot of talent. So it's a great time. I've always liked kids' stuff. So I hit an idea for this book, Nasty Book, which is, it's the first of a series. And this book, I guess the inspiration is, it's kind of anti-fairy tales. One day I was sitting around and I thought, you know what? How about a book of stories for kids where instead of everything turning out for the best, everything would relentlessly and cruelly and unfairly always turn out for the worst.
See, now,
somehow.
That's great. Thank you. I appreciate you doing that because I have often said, I say this in my stage act about parents, that you shouldn't lie to your kids. Like I say, I just realized my mother lied to me when I was a kid when she said you can be whatever you want to be. You can't.
If only your mother lied to you, that you'd be lucky, you'd be way ahead. No, the funny thing is I do a lot of reading. I was on book tour. I did a lot of readings to school kids, which is 200 seventh graders, dig it. But I did it for one class, and after I made that thing, I said, where everything turns out for the worst, some kid stuck his hand up and said, oh, you mean like life?
Well, you know, you start to scare me now, because when I was a kid, I surreptitiously started reading a guy named Guy de Maupassant, who used to write these really...
Indeed.
Yeah, you know, it kind of twisted my view of the world.
Yeah.
Are you going to twist people's view, the views of children?
I'm just going to help them along, because I think ultimately every kid loves mischief. Loves giving everything a flip around, loves tweaking things, loves pinning the tail on the donkey.
Surprises.
Exactly. And so this book is just a book of, you know, lots of pinnings the tails on the donkeys.
Well, there's certainly a lot of stories in here, Barry.
Aren't there?
Yeah, let's just tell me how you tweak some of these. Here's one that's just called Pizza.
Pizza. Oh, Twilight Zone was a big influence for this book. So this book is like a twisted Twilight Zone for kids. So this is a kid who goes to work at a pizza parlor, and they make fun of him. They send him off to deliver a pizza to a vampire.
Oh, that happens all the time in Hollywood. and a lot of times they make movies about it.
Yeah. Indeed.
Dirty movies.
Oh, wait a minute.
The best kind.
How about this one? How about this? What is this one? The Insect Clerk.
Oh, a young guy is working at a clothing store and gets a suspicion that a fellow clerk is in fact an insect. A big one.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Again, that happens in Hollywood all the time. That happens.
Well, that's a riff on Kafka, isn't it?
It is a riff on Kafka.
said,
Kafka for kids.
Kafka for kids.
Does he get stuck under the bed, this guy?
No. What happens is you have to read it. The insect doesn't want to admit who he is, really. He's trying to disguise.
What's your favorite story in here?
The one I think my personal favorite is probably the very first one I wrote. It's called You'll Find Out.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of like a cautionary tale, you know, the story. And it's a kid who likes to pick his nose.
Yes.
Ooh. An innocent pleasure. And his mother said, stop doing that or something terrible will happen to you. One day you'll prod out something that you'll be very unhappy with. And he says, like what?
Uh-huh.
Because he doesn't believe her. And then he gets a wormy, very monstrous surprise. That's either that.
Wow.
Like life, you know, big, wormy, monstrous surprise.
Well, you sort of taking me back to, I remember when I was in Hebrew school, there was a kid named Mark, not me, another Mark.
Not me.
Three Marks.
Yeah, he used to just sit in the back and work his nose with a crochet needle. He had taken a crochet needle from his mother. And just...
folk arts. You can't get it. You can't believe it.
The guy was way ahead of his time. Unfortunately,
exactly.
Whatever he was crocheting up there, you couldn't really see it. Perhaps he was doing it with his brain tissue.
You know, I saw the display at the Folk Arts Museum up here in town. No.
Oh, yeah?
And
it's actually there. Huh?
Well, Mary, you like to talk about Dick Cheney and stuff coming out of his nose.
That's right. I used to say that you just sort of half
lies,
expect...
Lies, just dribbling out of their noses. Just, lies.
I used to say that you sort of half expect his eyes roll back into his head and a lizard just to crawl out of his nose into his ear. Just go, I am the Dark Master.
Remember that TV show in was the early 80s about these lizards that took over the world? It was a sci-fi show, and they claimed to be just regular people. And then occasionally a mask would slip, and you'd see this monstrous, revolting reptile. It was actually a submerged criticism of the Reagan, you know, the Reagan years. But that's the kind of thing that's back. It just won't go away. Will it? It's just like aliens. They won't go away.
I'm trying to remember that TV show. I don't remember that TV show.
I remember. I just can't remember the name of it.
No, and the guy's now direct, because I do a little occasional acting, and that guy wound up directing. I wound up in a Disney film. where that guy was directing.
Did you ever think about actually making some sort of dark fairy tale that is not that far from the reality we're experiencing politically right now in this country?
You know, my stuff is always fantastical, and the trouble is, I have a story. You know, one of the stories that in the book that I like to read is a story called Tickle, which is about a kid who tickles his girlfriend, and she laughs so hard she explodes with a bang into many little pieces.
Yeah.
But the trouble is, real life has caught up with that in such a, you know what I mean? I mean, people are blowing up everywhere. So it's real, you know, I wrote another story about, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Modern life just so catches up with fantasy. It's sort of like there's all you can do is just sort of, all you need to do is read the newspaper.
That's true. That's true. And but you also, as we were talking about on the break, you seem to keep very much up with politics. Oh, you integrate that.
No,
your
I keep
show?
Them. I keep them very. I don't at all. Mm-hmm. My fantasy, you know, is really kind of Freudian, or you know, as its source. But yeah, who can help? You know, the great thing I found about. I hate politics.
Yeah.
I find it confusing. There's so much corruption about it, whatever. And when Clinton was around, even though I disagreed with him with a lot of things, at least you had the feeling that there was a real person in the White House, that nobody claimed that the world was flat, that he said, you know what, the earth is round. Mm-hmm. You may have had a lot of problems with him. I did. There were times, second administration, certainly, I would never have, I didn't want to vote for him. I thought, there's no way I can vote for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Then I thought, consider the alternative.
Yeah.
Mm. And then I said, you know what? Let me vote at least twice. Where can I line up? So, and these days, how can you have a, you know, you live in a world of this government where, you know, they say that every day you have to get up and say, you know what, the earth isn't flat, actually. It's round. It's kind of established.
Yeah,
you know, I know that you on the TV shows, you're going to get commentators saying, well, you know, here's someone who represents the flat earth position and someone, you know, and the truth is somewhere in the middle.
So clearly like, some whack job wants to tell us it's round again.
Yeah.
No, but I think this, we were talking, as you say, in the break, I think this plane thing is really interesting. I think the plane is just the loose thread that pulls so many other things. Because don't forget, essentially this war is a scam that was enacted right in front of everybody.
That's right. Yep.
So the damage that, for me, that this administration does is that it has really corrupted and damaged a sense of public reality. That's what these guys are playing with. They want reality to be obscured, and then everyone just says, oh, well, you know what? It's all a big mess. We'll just do this guy looks like he's willing to throw weapons at things.
Through repetition. It's a propaganda tool through repetition of non-reality, of talking points, of what they want people to believe. Eventually it absorbs into people's brains, and that's what they start to believe. They've twisted the perception.
It's also, have you guys ever had Chris Hedges on this show?
Many times.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I love Chris Hedges, and he had a really interesting thing to see. He said it in his book.
The new one, the
Wars of Philosophy. Yeah. He makes this little remark. Remember, he said he had this ethics professor at Harvard Divinity School where he attended. He didn't go to journalism school. The professor said, when you're my age, you'll be struggling with the forces of Christian fascism. And all the people in the class just looked at each other and said, what is he talking about? Yeah. So I when you say fascism in this country, and let's not throw it out, but it's a loaded...
Christo-fascism is something we say on the show a lot.
Christo-fascism?
Yes,
well, then let's say it. Anyway, I went to heard him speak, and I said, you know what? You know that's a really, really loaded term. Please explain. And he said, the guy who used the term, my professor, had worked for 2 years in Nazi Germany. He worked with Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the great resister of the Nazis.
Yep.
Hedges in this that issue of Harper's Magazine that came out in May about evangelicism.
Yeah,
he had a big piece about religious broadcasting. At the end of it, he picked up further and explained further what that remark about Christian fascism is. And he said, the professor said something really profound. He said, people aren't going to wake. People aren't going to believe that they're dealing with something that isn't normal, that is something much more radical and poisonous. And by the time they figure out what's going on, it's going to be too late. You can't play by people have to start sounding alarms. Something really, really wrong.
Christopher Hedges has been on our show several times. His books are Wars of Force, It Gives Us Meaning, and The Ten Commandments.
One just came out, yeah?
Yeah. I can't remember.
Every Person's Guide to War. Yeah.
That's a profound book. But what you're talking about, we talk about a lot about the Christo-fascist zombie brigade that is slowly taking over our country.
It is, and it's being used by the people in power.
Of course.
That's the thing. I mean, that's the other book that for me is a lodestone is the Thomas Frank book, What's the Matter with Kansas, where he talks about how they used.
Religion to divide the populace.
And to rev up people who are their shock troops who they never delivered to,
people,
who they get them out there.
People who actually, financially compromised, economically compromised by Republican policy.
I would say compromise is a euphemism.
Yeah, but that are willing to choose these religious beliefs over that. How do you fight with that? How do you fight against those type of core values? It's very difficult to change those people's minds.
I think what you do is what Frank's argument, and it's true, is that the Democratic Party cannot be a watered-down version of Republicanism.
No centricrats.
It's got to go after the economic issues that continue to drive people.
That's right, and this is all in his children's book.
Kids, are you listening? Yeah, are you listening,
the,
kids?
The Nasty Book is all about this. The
I have a story about an octopus that's a psychopathic octopus that preys on librarians.
That would be the administration.
Yeah. Indeed. And the detective in the story says, you can't arrest a man for just looking like an octopus.
Yeah.
Not in this country you can't.
Our guest is Barry Yorgrow. The book is The Nasty Book. It is available now, and it's tricky. It's a little tricky play. I'm not going to.
No, indeed. Let's say it. It's upside down. It's printed
upside down. There's that moment where it's like, well, somebody ought to tell Barry that, oh, it's on purpose.
You know, they have told me.
Thank you for being with us, Barry.
It's a pleasure.
When we come back, we'll have our liberal agenda for the day and maybe some final thoughts from Mark and Mark. And Barry just told us that it is a Russian proverb that if you sit between two people with the same name, you got to make a wish. Did you make one?
Yes, please, Mr. Fitzgerald, please.
47 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it, eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Hey, it's 52 past the hour. We're going to land this thing. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Hi.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. Us. If you sit between us, you got to make a wish. The TV show Barry Yorgrau was referring to was V.
V, yeah.
Yeah, apparently 9 million people called. I clearly don't watch much TV. And, of course, Chris Hedges, he was talking about a frequent guest on our show. The other book was Losing Moses on the Freeway, The Ten Commandments in America, which I read recently. Great book. And also Thomas Frank, who's been on our show several times. His book is What's the Matter with Kansas, is it?
Yes.
which we've talked about before. And also Barry Yorgrau's book, The Nasty Book for Children, strange and dark bit of stories. For the kids.
Yeah.
Right now, I want to talk about our buddy Lawton Smalls, our Planet Bush correspondent, the guy we have the love-hate relationship with. Has been kidnapped in Iraq, and apparently the kidnappers have forced him to make a statement. We got that. Apparently, we're getting another statement tomorrow or the next day from him. But we wanted to get you up to speed. Not you people that have been listening for 3 hours a day. the people that might just be tuning in this hour who might not know, because occasionally you get these emails like, what do you got to play it twice for? Because people tune in at different times. And this is Lawton. This is the dispatch we got on Friday, or was it Thursday, from Lawton in Iraq.
People of America, this is Lawton Smalls. I am speaking of my own free will. Well, I am a CIA agent and a puppet of the great Satan, George W. Two terms mandate. Bush. He is a buffoon and a failure. The man cannot even stay on a bicycle. Well, that's just mean, isn't it? Your illegal occupation of Iraq is doomed. You are running out of troops and money. You must send $50 million. Really? in small unmarked bills to the address on the package, or I, Lawton Smalls, CIA agent and stooge of the great Satan, will be. Do I have to say? executed. There is no God but God. Well, that's true. I mean, we agree on one thing anyway. Yeah. Okay. Salam alaikum. Deal with it. Thank you.
Wow, that's, hopefully we're going to get a dispatch from Lawton tomorrow.
Let's hope.
This Friday we'll be returning to Park Slope's Tea Lounge. How do you like that? That's in Brooklyn, Park Slope, Brooklyn, this Friday for another live broadcast. Freddie Johnson will be there to play some live music. We'll be giving away tons of free stuff. Johnny K Street will be there. MILF Cardinal Milfington will stop by. That's, again, at the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, on Union Street between 6th and 7th Avenues this Friday from 6 to 9. Last time we were there, the place packed. I think it was one of the biggest crowds we had.
Yeah, it was. And I like the Tea Lounge because it feels like you're actually sitting up in somebody's house. That's what I really enjoy.
Yeah, it's a nice place. People with couches. That's right. People actually brought their own couches. No, that's not true. Do you want to go now? Is that what you're looking at me for, Kayla? All right. See if we can pick that thing up then. Oh, there it is.
Whoa.
It's the fax from the Streisand compound. Look at Brendan P.D. McDonald's. Like, what's he doing? He's ruining the fake reality. This is the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are your marching orders for today. One, go to the bookstore and quietly tape Fire Robe leaflets over the very last page of the new Harry Potter book. Two, attend 50th anniversary of Disneyland. Stage protests demanding that Sleeping Beauty Castle be divided into affordable low-income housing units. Three, surround White House with positive power circle to deflect Rove's spin. Four, make sure that Willy Wonka's chocolate factory is in compliance with all wage and labor laws as they apply to Oompa Loompas.
Ooh.
Are they in the new one, the Oompa Loompas? Oh, good. I got to
Yeah.
Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. So Republican governors have gone to Iowa to test the political waters for 2008, huh? Better get a rowboat, fellas, because the SS Titanic Bush is about to go under. Wake up, sheeple. The next crop of felons is starting to sprout.
Uh-oh. Did you know anything about Oompa Loompa? I didn't know until my daughter, when she went to see that movie.
About Oompa Loompas?
About Oompa Loompas, yeah, the chocolate, whatever.
Did they use the little people again?
I guess.
They did? I the movie's doing well. I have not seen the movie. I just cannot. Gene Wilder, to me, is Willy Wonka.
Is Willy Wonka,
and
yeah.
And I'm going to have to let that go a little bit just to see this new movie.
Marin, it's actually one guy who plays all the Willy Wonkas. I'm sorry, all the Oompa Loompas. They just superimpose him everywhere.
Is he a little person?
Yes, he is. I guess.
So they couldn't hire, they couldn't at least throw some midgets a bone and hire them?
Oh. What, like people, the Wizard of Oz?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
They prefer little people.
Little people.
Yeah. Well, the midgets.
On tomorrow's show, political consultant Dave Mudcat Saunders will tell us how he's helping you turn red states blue. See you tomorrow, Marin.
See you later, Riley.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.